Hello and welcome to the Metapod Podcast, a Pokemon podcast that revolves around the evolving meta. Sean, how are you? Have you done any more pre-releases? Or did they start this weekend? Did they start this weekend?
Yeah, they started this weekend. Despite the video that I released on my channel on Saturday, the pre-releases started on Saturday.
Yeah.
I went to two on Saturday and I had a good time. It was pretty chill. Both of my kits on Saturday were pretty, I mean, I had a good time because I got Fezzendipity in both of my kits.
Yeah, you got Fezzendipity.
And I don't know if you remember what Fezzendipity does, but if it has a darkness energy, you could just roll a dice when your opponent attacks. And if it's a heads, then no damage goes through. I had one game where I just rolled heads the whole game. I never took one damage the whole game.
You never took damage. That's the dream.
So I was like, this feels a little broken right now, just not taking damage.
Mm-hmm. But it's once you start going like on the roll, then it's like, how do you beat it?
Yeah,
you can't.
And I had another game where I didn't roll heads at all after like five. And I'm like, you know what? Fair enough. It all is evening out now.
My dice is broken, you know. You just blame it on that.
Yeah, did you go to any pre-releases?
I did not go any pre-releases. We had we're starting to have championship weekend. It's in sports, the final championship weekend with, you know, graduations and stuff going on. So I've been pretty busy, haven't been able to do events, but none of my teams were competing at home. So I did get to watch a ton of Pokemon over the weekend with Stockholm Regionals, with Sapporo Champions League in Japan. So it was a pretty all right weekend. I can't complain.
I mean, I will say shout out to Azul for winning Stockholm with a control deck.
Yes. Yes. Control, in my opinion, like we said the other week, or I think I said this the other week after the previous regional, you know, once Azul, Grant, and Caleb jump on a control deck, then you know that control is back. And this win kind of solidifies it in a sense.
Yeah, no, I watched one of the games in the final and and I would say that the deck that Azul played against in the final is probably one of the decks better suited for the matchup because it was a lost box deck.
Yeah, it was a Lost Tina deck, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and those decks usually run like 6 to 8 switching cards, mm-hmm. which against Snorlax is great. You're like, oh, I have all these switching outs, I'll be fine, and and yeah, even then, Control was able to pull through with the win. So that's it was crazy, I think.
I didn't get to watch. I still haven't watched all the way through Stockholm yet because here on the West Coast, Stockholm Regional started at 1 a.m. and then ended by 9 in the morning. It was I'm not awake during any of this. I saw the end. There was one moment though that I saw that Azul played Misfortune Sisters and discarded 5 item cards.
Oh my god. Brutal.
All 5 hits from Misfortune Sisters on the top 5 cards of the opponent's deck were all item cards. So just discarded them all. It was a mill 5 supporter.
That's awful. That's ridiculous, actually. If I was that player, I'd just be like, I don't know how I come back from that. I just throw your hands up. You're like, I can't do anything.
It's one of those things that I think kind of gauges in the conversation. So this isn't one of our topics today. I'm just kind of going off of the conversation that we're having. I've seen a couple people say oh my gosh, is Airy worth needing a ban in the format because Control is starting to get good, you know. Control is on it again, and in all fairness, Control decks are somewhat against the spirit of the game as a whole, right? We saw it with Oranguru Pidgeotto Control and Bilbo and Bryson Man and stuff like that. But I saw a really good point to a tweet that was semi-popular in the Pokemon community, a tweet where somebody kind of explained that sure, Airy might be pretty strong, right? I think we can all agree that Airy is a strong card overall. But one of the things that needs to be known is that for a long time, item cards have been really strong.
Yeah.
Item cards have really just dominated formats, you know? So I think that's something that needs to be thought of when you're talking about the conversation of like Aerie and whatnot, is that like, if they didn't make item cards so good, like think about like if you've played any other card game, mm-hmm. right before any other card game, you know how strong Ultra Ball is, you know how strong Nest Ball is, you know how strong, you know, Mirage Gate is, you know, anything that just like simply lets you search your deck is insane.
Yeah.
And so like this is the norm in Pokemon, and it's just, I don't know. I thought it was an interesting point to the conversation, because I don't think Aerie's bad enough to be banned, because like we just started.
Yeah,
I mean,
if I can give a counterpoint to that right away, which is that they just printed a new supporter card that I think people should be playing, which is called Kieran, mm-hmm. and that card has two modes.
Yeah, and Twilight Masquerade, isn't it?
Yep, and that card has two modes. One mode is switching your active with your bench. It's a switch mm-hmm. card, basically. It's Tate and Liza. And the other mode is a plus 30 damage. So it's a genuinely playable card, I think, in a number of decks to fix math for you. And it has the additional effect of being a card that Aerie can't get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not an item. It's a supporter. So mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know. I do think Aerie is really strong, because right now I don't believe there is a card that's not an item that allows you to switch. I think all of the switching cards right now are items, maybe?
Well, ones that people are playing. You still have supporters like Rhyme, I think it's called.
I don't think Rhyme switches your Pokemon, does it? I think it switches your opponent switches, and they get to choose. And then you draw three. You don't switch.
Rhyme in Pokemon. Draw three cards. Switch out your opponent. Oh, yeah, it does switch out your opponents. I thought it switches out yours. My bad.
No, it's fine. But I'm thinking there might be one somewhere in the world that I'm like, that doesn't get played for whatever reason.
My point was, I'm pretty sure there's a bad supporter that nobody plays.
I mean, Penny and Turo, right, are those supporters. But, like, I don't know, like, you put it back in your hand, and then unless you can get rid of it, they just Erica's Invitation it back out. So you're just, mm-hmm. it's not great in that respect, but net-net, I think that Kieran is a good card that people should be playing, and I think it will make Aerie feel less unbalanced.
That makes sense. I do agree with that.
But Jake, speaking of new cards, do we want to start getting into this week's episode? And we've got one news story, and then we can get into new Twilight Masquerade decks, Discord questions.
We have one news story that really ticked me off. Not really. I don't, there's mixed feelings going on here.
So Jake, I'll just give the synopsis, and I want to hear your thoughts. So synopsis of the news story for the listeners: GameStop is going to start buying and selling graded Pokemon cards starting this week, according to the article. Mm-hmm. I don't know what day. I don't know if, like, you hear this and you walk into your game store with, like, a bunch of slabs, if they will do it. But they apparently are going to start buying and selling graded Pokemon cards, and they'll also have a section that allows people to buy holos and reverse holos for $1 each. They might also offer bundles of cards in the future, but, like, net-net, they want to use their space to be a sort of a card store vibe. And only other thing to note, they will only accept cards that are PSA 8 or higher, and they will mm-hmm. not accept cards that are worth $500 or more. And it's only from PSA, so no CGC, no Beckett. So that's basically all the details.
So they're not taking your base set Charizard.
Nope.
Right? PSA 10 base set Charizard. They're not taking that. And they're not taking your PSA 1 Machamp EX.
Yeah. Or your PSA Machamp 1 Rayquaza Gold Star or whatever. They're not taking that either.
Interesting. They will launch with $1 holos and reverse holos. Ugh.
Yeah, I mean, it's this basically is bulk.
Yeah, for $1, yikes. I don't like this. But also I'm probably just being boomer. We know that GameStop has been very into the Pokemon event, right? They've had like trade and play events since 2019. I remember going to one in 2019, like right after Henry Brand won Worlds, and that's where I got Macargo GX. So we know that GameStop has been interested in the trading cards, and you know, with GameStop in general, the last like what 5 to 10 years, just getting more into the memorabilia scene, like the merchandise scene. I mean, they've had Pokemon cards for a long time. They have a bunch of other cards and stuff. So I guess as a shop that constantly buys things and like gets trade-ins and stuff like that, it makes sense that they would eventually go into PSA. But I feel bad for the workers, because unless there's like some sort of system where you can very easily look up, that's the key word in this, very easily like look up these like PSA graded cards, like those workers don't get paid enough to like barely even check the games that they buy, and now they have to also check PSA cards. I mean, I don't know how to fake a PSA card, but I'm sure somebody will do it and try it and eventually be successful with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, they have like the labels on the back, like the barcodes that you can scan. So
yeah,
my guess is they have some integration with PSA, which is why they only are doing PSA cards partly.
Yeah, that's another thing too. Yeah, no CGC or but it also says allowed yet. So yeah,
maybe they're working it. But my guess is that they have a back-end system where they've input, they can like tie into the PSA system to verify authenticity as best they can. And then they probably have imported all of those cards and enough sales from eBay and other places that they can be like, okay, this is the current average sale price. This is what we are willing to pay. So like, I think it will be semi-automated in that respect. You're not going to like be able to haggle with the GameStop employee. I think that's also important to note is the pricing structure here is almost certainly going to be similar to the way that they buy games, which is it's a set price. You take it or leave it. And odds are the set price will be lower even for a retailer than what you could normally sell it for. So like,
it's like 40% or 50% or something like that, right? When they buy games,
sometimes it's even less. Sometimes they'll give you like $3 for a game and then resell it for like 15 or 20.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, who knows with cards what they'll actually be. But my guess is that the biggest problem they'll have with players is that, you know, people that have a decent number of cards or like somewhat desirable cards are going to look at this and be like, why would I take 10% less value selling it to GameStop versus going to my LGS and selling it? Or even like, if I don't have that many slabs, maybe I'm happy just selling it on eBay too, right? Like, you know, and I can just get market price for it. Mm-hmm. So I think GameStop is going to find that like, while the convenience of selling it at GameStop is not nothing, that's worth, you know, it's worth something. I think they're going to find that like most of the slabs that they actually have in stock are going to be what I'm going to call bulk slabs.
Oh yeah.
Cause like,
I mean, they're going to be like the one that I have over here where it's like the Porygon common, you know?
So I think that's going to be the challenge, right? Is that like so many cards have been graded from PSA. And now I think partially, I wonder if PSA also approached GameStop to be like, hey, there's so many cards getting graded right now and they're not moving fast enough on the open market. And so if we can open up effectively like 2,000, 3,000 or more retailers that will buy cards from consumers, that will make having and getting these PSA graded cards feel more liquid, like more like a liquid asset that people can like sell and buy and whatever. I don't know. That's my conspiracy hat.
I don't know if PSA cares about the open market.
Oh,
because
PSA
they get
cares.
Like they get their money and they get their business from people just sending in cards. They don't get they don't get the money from like people, like they don't care what the PSA Porygon goes for. They just care that at one point somebody submitted this Porygon card and got it graded, you know?
I disagree. I think they really care about the, because the thing is, if you get a bunch of PSA graded cards and you can't sell them, people are going to stop grading cards. That's just the reality, right? Like it's people grade cards for the purpose, in many instances, for the purpose of increasing their value. And many of those people increase their value because they then want to sell the cards.
But then wouldn't the market self-correct itself with the value of the cards?
Well, sure. The right? cards like if go you, down if in you value. Can't, and nobody yeah, they thinks just, they're worthwhile to go grade because it costs $20 to grade each card, $10 to $20. And if the cost plummets, if what you can sell the card for plummets such that grading the card is no longer worthwhile, so the cost of grading has to be less than the profit you will make off of selling the card after you grade it.
But it also has to be like every single card, right? Because it's like, I mean, it's like if one card goes down, right, and you can't sell it higher than what you can grade it, then people will just move on to a different card. Right. I mean,
maybe,
like as long as there is a card that is worth grade, it would have to be like every single card.
I mean, I think that 2021 and 2022 were a good example of, like, you know, you remember how much PSA was getting flooded with cards, right?
Yeah, they were backed up for like 3 years or something like that.
And that was entirely due to the fact that cards, the secondary market, was so high.
Yeah.
So everybody was trying to cash in. Everybody was selling going to PSA to get them graded. PSA made so much money off of that. So much so that even companies like CGC said, hey, we didn't used to grade cards, but we'll grade cards now. They changed their whole business model because of the secondary market saying, we want more graded cards. And I think we've actually come down, in my mind, like the number of cards that Pokemon prints, the number of cards, modern cards that are getting graded. I think now seeing a graded card, it's not bad. It's just, I think that there's so many more graded cards that the inherent value of having a graded card, like if you get the new Charizard or whatever from Obsidian Flames, for instance, we talked about how some of those cards are not really worth nearly as much as what they were in older sets, right?
No, I think it's like $50 for the special illustration crazy rare Charizard EX.
Right. So like, okay, well, if your top end from a set is only $50 ungraded, and if a bunch of people are grading it to increase the price, and then you have like a population 1,000 PSA 10, I don't know what the actual number is, but all of a sudden that PSA 10 also isn't worth that much money. And then you're just sort of sat there like, yeah, people are always going to buy Charizard. That's the extreme example. But like all of the other cards down the line, like the normal EX of Charizard, I think back to like Unbroken Bonds days, a PSA 10 of Reshiram and Charizard EX, not a special version, at one point was $100, even for the PSA 10.
And that card is banging in terms of art.
Oh, it's
that
great
card art is so good. Yeah.
But that was $100 for the PSA 10. And think about like what the base level of a Charizard EX now costs ungraded is probably like $2, $3. You get it graded and it's at most at a PSA 10, maybe $15. To me, like, is it worth grading it if it costs the same to buy it raw and to grade it, and then your total set, you know, value for sale is 15? And then people, I think, then stop sending cards in to get graded. That's my theory about business, is I think they all like help each other. It's a flywheel effect. The more cards are moving on the open market, the more interest there is in grading cards to then sell and cash in on that open market. But
yeah, I'm not smart enough for this. I talk about sports. I don't have a business model.
But Jake, you had a really good point when we talked about this briefly earlier, is the blockbuster model.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. They feel like one step away from being blockbuster in my eyes. It's just like a company that is like, I mean, Blockbuster, maybe I was too young to know this, but like Blockbuster to me didn't feel like, when it was really starting to go away, that it was kind of like grasping at straws like PSA has been doing, or I'm sorry, not PSA, GameStop has been doing like the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Because, man, let me tell you, like, I've never gone in a GameStop in the last 6 years and seen more than one worker there at one time and more than four people in the store. On like a regular weekend.
I think it's weird. I look at GameStop and I think that they've come to the realization that selling, basically turning themselves into a local game store, is the only way they're going to survive, because physical games, like, you know, video games, are going away. They just are.
Sadly.
Sadly. But, like, that's the reality, right? They are going away. Consoles will always exist, but people will be able to buy them on Amazon and Best Buy and wherever, right? And I think it's just an awkward spot of like, well, you want to become a local game store, but you are not. You're a franchise. You're like a corporate. So like, you start selling Pokemon cards and then Magic cards and then board games. And then what? Now you're competing with the person that runs the local game store down the street who I go and play Pokemon at, or, you know, One Piece or whatever. Like, no, I'm not going to go to GameStop. Now, I will say this. I do think that there's a lot of places in the country that have very few local game stores near them, but they do have a GameStop. And I think that is it'll be a benefit in those communities potentially.
Have you ever seen a GameStop big enough though to potentially host a league? Like, where would they put them?
Oh, all over the suburbs, man. There's GameStops in, like, when I visit family in Dallas and stuff like that, that are just massive. Like, really? As big as a local game store, at least.
I don't know if I've ever seen a game, and maybe this is just because the places that I've lived and the ones that I've gone to, but I've never seen a GameStop be big enough to where it could hold a league night without like shutting down the store or like moving the stuff that they got in the aisles.
They would definitely have to rearrange their aisles. I agree with that. And this may also be that a lot of the places that I play in New York City area are small. So I'm used to places that, like, how many people can you fit?
I don't know, 12, 16. You're used to playing at the Cricket Wireless, Sean.
Right. You're right. So I'm like, you know, if you got four folding tables, then you got an LGS, baby. Let's go. That's New York mentality a little bit. But yeah, they definitely would have to rearrange. But I don't know. We talked too long on this. Do you want to get to new decks?
I'm gonna try in the near future to see what it's like going over there and doing something with the PSA cards, because I just got, so like in One Piece, PSA just announced a collaboration with One Piece, and they're giving away like an exclusive One Piece card to people who have the magazine subscription or like the PSA subscription. So obviously I bought it. Yeah. I bought the subscription. And so I get this, like, you get like these perks and memberships. So I was thinking, because I have a whole bunch of cards that I eventually want to like grade and keep pristine, you know, and preserve. So I was thinking, with my membership that I have for the next year, sending in a couple cards to get those benefits. So if I send in those cards, some of those cards, I'll plan to at least take one to GameStop to see what they can give me for it.
Yeah. Folks that listen, if you go in, let us know in our Discord or whatever. Link in the description.
Yeah, you can join our Discord server that we've got. Link in the description and show notes. Fun place, the Discord server. There's over 100 people in there, Sean.
Yeah. It's popping sometimes. It's cool. Yeah, and we'll actually we'll answer some of those questions as they come up or at the end as well. But Jake, do you want to get into new format stuff? I have the Champions League Sapporo deck list up for the top 16 to start with. Do you want to start there?
The Sapporo Champions League was the not last weekend, but the weekend before. Very, very big tournament. 2,700 players in the future Twilight Masquerade format. This is kind of a sneak preview of the format that we'll get into here in the next couple weeks out west. The winner of the event, a likely winner, Sean. I don't know if you could have predicted this. Maridon.
I would not have. No.
No, I would not have. I forgot this deck existed. I almost thought that like Maridon rotated for some reason.
Yeah, this is it's surprising because like I look at this deck and I have it pulled up on screen, but for the listeners, it looks kind of just like a normal Maridon. In terms of new cards, the only two cards in the deck that are new are one Tatsugiri, which the ability allows you to look at the top six cards of your deck when it's in the active, take a supporter, put it into your hand, and then that's actually it. That's the only new card in the deck. And then you throw in some rescue boards for Tatsugiri and maybe to retreat, you know, Raikou or Squawkabilly, whatever, you know, gets trapped in the
I would argue the Heavy Baton is also new in there, but you are playing one Town Store, right?
Yep.
Which helps you find tool cards because you play four of them and you play three different ones and two rescue boards, two bravery charms, and then Heavy Baton and four Seal Stone. So you're actually playing six. My math was wrong. Six different tool cards, four unique cards, and then also you're playing Arvin's in a build like this, so Heavy Baton makes sense when you go in with your Iron Hands. And you know, Iron Hands costing a ton of energies, especially, you know, usually all lightning energies, Heavy Baton is really, really nice to be able to redistribute to like Maridon, Raichu, things like that, Raikou, to be able to continuously still attack and not like lose out on these very, very important resources.
When I look at this deck, Jake, I think to myself, like, I think the reason this deck did so well, maybe it's a guess, but obviously Charizard, Gardevoir, and now Dragapult are stage two decks that can be a little slower, right, on the uptick. And because of that, I think you maybe lean into Iron Hands in the early game. This deck also plays two different turbo energy. So between the turbo energy and things like Iron Bundle, Prime Catcher, three copies of Boss's Order, right? I think being able to get off turn one knockouts maybe with either it's Raikou or something else, and then following that up with extra prizes on Iron Hands. And I think that speed maybe is really hard for some of those decks to push back against. But because by the time they're ready to go, you've maybe already taken three prizes. So, but I think that would be my guess as to why this maybe did so well in this first event.
I think also there's a point with Bravery Charm and the HP numbers of these Pokemon. I think, especially when you talk about like Greninja, Dragapult, right? And we'll show you a Dragapult list later. Dragapult does a great job of spreading the energies, reminiscent of the Dragapult VMAX, to where like it doesn't really like hit for 500 damage and takes a knockout here. It's like, oh, I'm going to put a little damage here. I'm going to put a lot of damage on the active, but mainly like also spreading the damage. So a deck like Maridon that doesn't play like these baby basic Pokemon, right, that evolve into the stage two, stage ones or whatever, doesn't really get capitalized as much heading into a meta of Dragapult, to where the damage spread isn't as like impactful.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's like the numbers can get awkward for Dragapult because, you know, if you have the Bravery Charm, like you said, the attack from Dragapult directly won't knock out any of the two prizers if it has a Bravery Charm on it. And then the damage counters that you place can certainly put things in range for a follow-up turn. But then you're in a two-turn cycle where, like, okay, in two turns, I'll hopefully take four prizes. But if this deck is going fast enough, then the goal for this deck is to say, well, yeah, but you're not going to get that second turn. You know, like it's going to be too slow or whatever it might be. So I don't know. I think this was a big surprise to a lot of players seeing a Maridon deck win this big tournament. I will say it maybe is important to also note Japanese tournaments are best of one, not best of three. So I don't want to say that to like write off the success of this deck, But that is to say that I think this deck is one that in particular thrives off of a hot hand, right? If you get to go second with this deck and you can consistently get off an attack for one or two prizes to start the game, it becomes very difficult because then you're ahead on the prizes and, you know, barring some bad situations, like, you know, again, a hot hand you can run such that you'll get to your six before your opponent more often than not. So I think that also plays a little bit into this deck being like, you know, the person who played it piloted it well, but he also clearly got some luck on his side.
Yeah, I mean, that's an effect of like the meta itself and like meta evaluation and being able to determine like what's a good play, what maybe isn't a good play, you know, what you're expecting in there. So there's a lot of factors that go into it, but especially with the West being so favorable to Maraidon, right? People love Maraidon. It's definitely, I would say, and a cheap deck to build through like the different products that have come out. You can get the cards pretty easy. People will probably jump on this deck first, especially because it doesn't take many new cards to build comparatively to previous formats.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But another deck, so the second place deck that is also not a new deck was Gardevoir EX.
Mm-hmm.
Jake, give us a rundown of what makes Twilight Masquerade Gardevoir different.
First of all, you're playing the Hyper Aroma A-Spec in here, which I hyped on. And I think it works also really, really well in this deck. Remember, Hyper Aroma, search your deck for up to 3 stage 1 Pokemon, put them in your hand, then shuffle your deck. Great when you're playing an engine that really relies on the stage 1s, like Dialga does, Gardevoir, right, with the refinements, being able to constantly get your Pokemon. Also, playing the little monkey Dory in there from the new set that I mentioned. I think I mentioned during our set review that a Gardevoir was playing this card.
Exactly.
Being able to move damage counters, only playing a couple of these dark energies. You have a couple different variety of attackers in there as well, with a couple Drifloons. This list going into the Drifloon Bravery Charm, Sean's favorite combo right now in the last year of cards. You also have a Scream Tail with that attack, Roaring Scream. That's what I was trying to get at. And then you also have other different things like Cresselia in there. Cresselia kind of remaking a resurgence in this format. And the reasons that I saw a lot of people were like, why is Cresselia back? You know, like, what? Like, this card got booted out. But I think with the addition of Monkey Dory in the deck, you talk about a Dragapult that's placing 6 damage counters. If there's 6 damage counters on a Curlia, right, you use Monkey Dory, you can get 3 of them off. You can use Cresselia to get 2 more of them off, so now there's only 1 damage counter instead of 6, because you're taking away 5, which means that another Dragapult, right, if it's at 60 damage and then you do the wombo combo of Cresselia, Monkey Dory, it's back at 10 damage. Another Dragapult attack can only get it up to 70. So it's really good in the essence of, you know, just trying to prevent those like little prize cards taking that overwhelming of the damage spread that I was talking about. The Maraidon does a really good job of not letting decks like Dragapult really capitalize on. So, really interesting deck. You're playing the Turos. I think the Irida is also really interesting. You play a 4 of Irida in this deck. And I think that's just more for the consistency part, right? In like this best of one style, you're playing the Radiant Greninja Manaphy. So the ability to get a couple different water Pokemon, but also just like I talked about earlier, like item cards are so strong, right? Your hyper spray. Is that what it's called? Hyper Spray?
Hyper Aroma.
Hyper Aroma is an item card, and it's super instrumental to your game plan. So having Irida and being able to find that alone is just so good. So, again, item cards are broken. I'll just keep saying it. But this deck just really, really, I mean, it's it was a cool deck to watch. There's some good stream games of Gardevoir.
Yeah. No, I think it's, you know, it's an interesting deck, especially too, because like the Cresselia with the Monkey Dory, I think another situation that's important to point out is with Cresselia, you maxed out at what, 120 damage that you could put somewhere? Mm-hmm. With the Monkey Dory, now that max is 150. And yeah. 150 knocks out Archaeops. Which is like, oh, that's, man, that's pretty good.
You may listeners think, oh, why am I worried about Archaeops now? We'll let you know that there was out of the top 16, there was 1, 2, 3, 4 Lugias, 4 Lugias in top 16. So maybe Lugia's back.
Yeah. So I just wanted to mention that it's an interesting a note there. So yeah. So out of the like top two, it's just very familiar. And out of the top four decks, there is a Lugia as well. So we should do the Lugia first, just to round out the top four in terms of like decks that exist but got better. So Lugia was fourth place at this tournament. And, you know, there's a couple of changes in this deck, which I think is really important to point out. I think most of the engine runs relatively the same, but where the deck deviates now is you're playing a copy of the Blood Moon Ursa Luna EX. And then for those that don't remember, the ability on the Blood Moon Ursa Luna says it costs one less for each prize your opponent has taken, which means if your opponent has taken 1, 2, 3, 4 prizes, it costs one energy of any kind to do 240 damage. If they've taken 5 prizes, it attacks 240 for free.
It's a huge late game card.
Great late game, but also in an Archaeops deck, right? It's actually, you can play it early game too if you throw double turbos on or other cards.
Yeah, you could.
Like, it's a great deck for that as like a, if you want a big attacker that's going to be able to survive a response, Blood Moon or Saloon, I think, really helps. The other attackers, though, in this deck are Iron Hands EX is another big attacker in this deck.
And making a resurgence in this deck.
And the reason it can do that is because this deck is playing the A-Spec Legacy energy now. So instead of Master Ball, right, you are playing one copy of Legacy energy, which adds, it's a rainbow energy effectively. And it also has the added bonus of making your Iron Hands a single prizer.
Once per game. Yeah.
But like, imagine being able to throw an Iron Hands up, take two prizes off of an Amp You Very Much, and then tell your opponent the best you can do is one prize in response. Like, oh my gosh, that's
unless
brutal.
Unless you boss around to another Pokemon, which effectively allows me, again, to Amp You Very Much.
Exactly. So I think those are some of the biggest changes. The other one, though, which I'll point out, is the addition of Carmine, the new supporter. So Carmine lets you, as a supporter, that you can play on your first turn going first, and it's like a baby research. You discard your hand and draw 5. So how are you feeling about Lugia right now, Jake?
I think Lugia is interesting of a deck, and it's weird that Lugia didn't necessarily translate to the East like we kind of had anticipated. So I guess now I'm a little skeptical about Lugia in terms of its viability in the format, if it's going to fall flat again, because I do think kind of the best of one, best of three conversation comes in with a deck like this. But I think it'd be cool, you know, if Lugia continued to stay like more viable, and hopefully like the A-Spec, like the legacy energy, like you mentioned, is kind of what it needs to be able to maintain that viability. I think Blood Moon or Ursa Luna has a ton of value with the deck, because before, like, I mean, when Lugia was its strongest at its peak, it was able to do more damage than it does now, right? And so the Blood Moon Ursa Luna is one of the ways that that deck can get there with that extra damage. It's interesting to me that this deck doesn't play like damage modifiers of any kind. Maybe I'm not 100% sure which ones you would play, and you probably have to somewhat reformat the deck to be able to do that, and maybe it's an inferior version. But yeah, I mean, just it's more viable now with with a couple of these cards. Carmine, the Blood Moon, or Saluna, especially Carmine. Like, Carmine is so good in this deck. We talked about the importance of like setup and why Carmine is just such a good card.
Yeah.
Overall, right? Like being able to play it going first. But especially in a deck like this, where like you can draw into Archaeops, but you don't know how to discard it.
Yeah.
Right. There are plenty of situations where that happens, and like you need to do more than just read the wind or whatever. Maybe you don't want to read the wind. So Carmine gives you another effective out to be able to complete that and get those guys in the discard pile right away.
Yeah. No, it's I think we'll see. I don't know. I don't know how many Carmines most decks will play, but I don't know. Carmine just feels so good if you get it going first. We'll talk about a deck that I built a little later, but yeah, it's just, you feel like your setup is just so good on turn one going first that like any deck that needs any sort of setup, I feel like probably would benefit from playing Carmine as a two of.
So it's also a card that you can play at any time.
Yeah, exactly.
In the game, it is just going any time that this leader leader effect. That's a different card game. The supporter can be played at any time.
But Jake, third place, I should say, was a new deck and probably the most hyped up deck from the set.
Definitely the most hyped up deck.
Jake, do you want to give people a rundown on what a Dragapult EX deck might look like?
Dragapult EX is the new hot deck coming in Twilight Masquerade. This 320 dragon HP, 320 HP dragon type EX Pokemon, stage two, there we go. Pokemon, it deals out 200 damage for just two energies, but also spreads out the six damage counters to your opponent's Pokemon in any way you like, reminiscent of the Dragapults we've seen of the past. The difference, though, is there's no rare candy, there is some rare candies, but you're not entirely focused on rare candy in this deck like you were previously because of the new ability on the stage one, Dracloak, that surveillance ability. Basically, I mean, this is quite literally, Sean, Pidgeotto airmail. Is it airmail? This is literally airmail.
Yeah, basically. I don't know if, do you look at the top two? Yeah, you look at the top two, one in your hand.
Yeah, you
one
look at
the
top
bottom.
Two, put one in, yeah. Put, yeah it's just airmail. It's the same ability, except now there's a viable stage two attached to it. And people had problems with Pidgeotto. Let's wait until they find out that Dragapult is even better than the Pidgeotto. But the Dragapult having that effect and that ability really allows this draw engine to accelerate, and just be so good. And alongside the ability to use one of my favorite arts from the last couple sets, the Zatu with that clairvoyant sense, right? That little tingling bird or whatever. Being able to accelerate these basic psychic energies to a Pokemon on the bench and then draw two cards off of that gives you that being able to, in one single turn, go from zero energy to attacking amount of energy. Because you know you accelerate the psychic energy and then you attach the basic fire, which basic fire is not that hard to find when you play something like Earthen Vessel.
Yeah.
In this deck, especially because you have an Arvin build. So Arvin for Earthen Vessel is great. You play the A-spec of choice, at least in this build that we're showcasing, the Unfair Stamp, which is that revenge card. When a Pokemon's knocked out, you shuffle draw five, they shuffle draw two, right? Couple different evolution, de-evolution, technical machines to be able to get your game plan going, especially the evolution machine. Like, that card is just so nice in a deck like this.
Yeah, like whether that's, you're probably choosing to evolve your Dracloak more often than not if you don't have any other options, but you know, if you have a Dragcloak in hand, then you can evolve up the Zatu, and then you have acceleration and more draw. But the fact that TM Evolution basically says, hey, during your next turn, you're going to get to draw more cards with this deck. Like, oh, great. Mm-hmm. I don't have to worry too much about playing research or like crazy supporters. I can just rely on Arvin and know that I'm going to draw more cards anyways. So
I think it's interesting that this deck doesn't play the Hyper Aroma like the Gardevoir deck does.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thought process there, and I think it's a thought, right? Like, you could totally play Hyper Aroma in this deck.
Mm-hmm.
I think, though, that most players with this version of the deck are prioritizing disrupting their opponents. Because when you're, like, you know, we talk about 200 damage, 6 damage counters. If you can combo that with, major disruption to your opponent's hand, and then they can't adequately respond, whether that's using a Turo or a Penny, Collapse Stadium, you know, anything to get rid of the damage counters, because that's really the thing you're worried about most, mm-hmm. is they find a way to, like, undo the hard work that you have done. So maybe, I guess, that's their thought process.
I think it's also interesting that, you know, kind of just thinking through it in my head, you know, as I provoke that question, just like, Gardevoir stresses such an importance on discarding energies, right? So you, like, almost always need to get it as fast as possible. But sometimes with Dragapult, you're not that necessarily urgent to get your Dracloaks online because of playing stuff like Rare Candy, right? So,
yeah,
like, your game plan can go without a Dracloak. Whereas with Gardevoir, it's very difficult to get your game plan going without a Curlia in place. So just an interesting thought.
One other card I'll mention here, if anybody is looking to play Dragapult, Enhanced Hammer, that got a reprint. Mm-hmm. It allows you to discard a special energy from one of your opponent's Pokemon. You need this in your deck, because if somebody plays a Mist Energy, that will prevent you from placing those 6 damage counters onto that Pokemon. Mm-hmm. And a well-placed Mist Energy can really ruin this deck's game plan. So don't sleep on throwing in at least one Enhanced Hammer if you're going to run this deck.
I mean, there's Enhanced Hammer for the Mist Energy. There's Enhanced Hammer in the Legacy Energy that we just talked about with Lugia, right? Legacy Energy does provide problems for really any deck. And then also stuff like Arceus. Right, if you come across the more random things in the format, especially something like Arceus, there's a double turbo, right, that is always prevalent. So yeah, I mean, because let me tell you, like, the random decks are anti-meta a lot of times. So especially as one of the better decks in the format, and definitely probably a very popular one at that, you know, like, the anti-meta can get you if you're not careful.
Jake, I want to hop on over to some lists created in the West, though, with Jesse Parker and Andrew Mahone. They did some testing last week, and they built a few different decks, and I just wanted to take a look at what they were cooking up. I guess we can start on Dragapult. I don't think it's any different. I think maybe the difference here is they don't play a TM Devolution. That's really it.
The big differences are the tool cards that are in here. Like you were talking about, there's no Devolution in here. There's just Defiance Band, right? Yeah. Which I think Defiance Band kind of makes sense overall when you talk about the decks that we were talking about earlier in the Sapporo Champions League. You know, you have the Maridon, right? Maridon has these awkward numbers of like 230, 220, stuff like that. And the Dragapult only hits for 200. In terms of its main damage on the attacking opponent. So if you can attach a Defiance Band after they've take like a prize or two or whatever, whether they've, you know, done the Iron Hands thing or just taken a knockout in general, the Defiance Band is going to add up and do more damage overall in the contest. So I do like the inclusion of Defiance Band. I think it helps your math a lot of times.
But some of the other decks they were playing around with, I'm going to start on this weird Raging Bolt Ogre Pond deck. This
isn't the first time that I've seen this deck.
Interesting. I mean, when you think about it, you're like, okay, I get it. I can see why this exists. So for those of you who for good reason are like, excuse me, Raging Bolt, what? Raging Bolt is an ancient Pokemon from the last set. which is 240, and it has an attack for a fighting and a lightning is what you need on it. But then you can discard any number of energy from Raging Bolt, from any of your Pokemon in play. Mm-hmm. And that Raging Bolt will do, I believe it's 70 times damage for each energy you discard this way.
So I'll look, but it's the very similar effect to Reshiram and Zekrom GX.
Yeah, yeah. So I think if I remember correctly, it's 70 damage for each. So, you know, in the past, you could play this with a few different 70. Engines. I played around with different things, but this deck is using the grass type Ogerpon EX, which has the ability that allows you once per turn to attach a grass energy to it, draw two cards. So that is kind of how you get a bunch of energy on board quickly. You play Professor Sada to power up your Raging Bolts. And I guess the thought process there is, hey, we're going to be a two prize focused deck, but you know, the benefit here is if Charizard is getting a lot of play, well, then the Ogerpon can actually go in and take a knockout because of weakness, which is really huge. But outside of that, the Raging Bolt then can basically, in theory, knock out one hit KO anything in the format. So interesting list. And then I will say the one thing I would change, and this is just my thoughts, because I played a Raging Bolt deck list for a while. They're playing Prime Catcher in the deck, which I don't hate, but the problem that this my version of the deck especially faced quite a lot was that you are a two prize deck. And if you are playing against anything that can make the prize mapping awkward for you, where you are not taking two prizes every turn as well, then your opponent will win because they will get to their six before you do, right? Any single prize deck is really hard for this deck to match up against. So I would actually consider a legacy energy in this list.
I think it's interesting that Jesse opted to play two bug catching sets with this deck. Sean, do you remember what that card does when we did our set review?
I do. It's in one of my decks. It is, look at the top seven cards of your deck, and you can put any number of grass Pokemon or basic grass energy.
Or choose up to two.
Up to two. A basic.
You probably don't really find more than two.
But yeah, yeah. But like the nice thing about this is like you know you have Earthen Vessel to find your grass energy, but like it's just more cards in your hand for a pretty simple item card, and you're playing three of the Ogerpon, so
very weird. This thing also opting for two Squawk abilities, really just valuing the first turn Squawk ability overall to be able to set up your field. I feel like I'd have to rewatch. I'd have to rewatch the games that they played, but the Squawk ability, I don't know, when you play more than one Squawk ability EX in a deck, really seems like you're playing at turn one almost every single game.
I think the reason for that is you want to try to attack going second if you can.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you can Squawk, discard some energy, hopefully find a Sada. And if you find a combination of Sada, a couple of Raging Bolts, attach for turn, and some Ogerpons, you can knock out anything turn one going second. Mm-hmm. So, in terms of other lists, though, what's the next list you want to talk about that they went over?
They also showcased Maridon, which, I mean, it's almost the same thing. You know, you have your one of Heavy Baton, you have a lot of tool cards, you play a couple double turbos. This list opting for Prime Catcher overall, which I don't think was the A spec of choice in the other list that we showcased from Sapporo Champions League, but pretty much the same in general. The Lost Box, though, there's a Lost Tina in here that is relatively the same overall, just a couple differences in, you know, you have the stadium cards, right? Lost Tina, especially after the loss of Path to the Peak, really hasn't had a stadium card that it super identifies with overall. Yep. And so the Temple of Sinnoh is one of the ones of choice. You know, turning off, like you mentioned, the Mist Energy, right? A very, very important card in some decks to prevent stuff like the Dragapult damage, the Giratina V-Star power, things like that. Also just defeating Lugia in general, I feel like if they can't respond with a stadium, but also playing the unfair stamp, just disrupting your opponent yet again, as well as a Roxanne Iono combo in terms of supporter, playing a couple counter catchers and a couple boss in here, and then splitting the energies with 4 psychics, 3 grass, 3 water, and 3 jet energies.
Yeah, I mean, pretty standard. I think the Blood Moon Ursaluna is probably the biggest new thing to the deck. And the Unfair Stamp. I don't want to discount that, actually.
Yes.
So, you know, an attacker that can late game just come in out of nowhere and do big damage. So, basically, Radiant. You get a Radiant Charizard and a Radiant Greninja in this deck. Huzzah.
Huzzah.
And then, yeah, the Unfair Stamp. So,
can you play both of them, though?
Which one?
Like, if you were a Sablezard list, like primarily Sablezard, can you play both the Radiant Charizard and the Blood Moon Ursaluna in the same deck? Is that going to work?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, you could just play the Radiant Zard if you need to, if you care about your opponent taking 2 prizes. So when your opponent has 2 prizes left, you play the Zard, do 250. It is 10 more damage, which does matter sometimes, maybe. And then when your opponent is on 1 prize, you instead play the Blood Moon Ursaluna and you don't need any energy. And so then you have a 260 HP body doing 240 damage. So I actually think that, I don't know, that's an interesting idea. Maybe like Sablezard makes a comeback with Blood Moon Ursaluna too. You effectively get that effect twice.
Yeah. And it's like, and that's the ideal scenario. So that's not even the situations where like, oh, I can't find one, so I need to go in with the other at this point. And with stuff like Mirage Gate in format, getting those energies is not the hardest thing in the world, I would say.
No. Last overall deck I want to talk about, and then we'll get to some of the Discord questions, is a deck that I built. I put this in our Discord on, I believe it was Friday maybe, or Saturday. And this is the Diplin deck. So for those of you who don't know, there was like the new ability Festival Lead, which needs the Festival Ground Stadium and combos with Thwacky's ability. Basically, if you have Festival Grounds the stadium out, you can use the attack on the Pokemon with Festival Lead twice. And the benefit of that is, you know, situationally, your opponent may not have enough HP such that you attack once, you might knock it out. Then your opponent has to pick a new Pokemon to put in the active to take the second hit. So can really be like a sneaky deck at taking extra prizes. The list that I have pulled up here, I'm using the Grass Applin, but like, I don't know, maybe the Dragon version is better. That was not a deep thought. They're both 40 HP. Whatever. That was my thought. I was like, I don't know, man. They're 6 one way, half a dozen for me. But 4-4 line of that. Diplin having the ability of, for each bench Pokemon that you have, you do 20 damage. So in theory, you do 100 damage twice if you have the stadium out. But I'm going to point out a little combination of cards here, Jake, that I think is really important to mention, which is Defiance Band and Kieran.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about it, Diplin, it attacks twice. And cards like Defiance Band say this Pokemon's attacks do 30 more damage. So if you are behind on prizes, which is very likely early in the game, instead of doing 100 twice, you'll do 130 twice. So you actually do 260 total.
Okay.
And you put down Kieran, and that does your Pokemon do 30 more damage to your opponent's Pokemon V or EX. So now you're not doing 130, you're doing 160 twice. So you're doing 320. In theory, Diplin can one-hit KO a Dragapult EX.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, like, and
in theory.
I mean, I will say, I was playing, I played a couple of fun games, and I had Diplin out, and I was able to one-hit KO a Lugia V-Star. No problem.
No problems.
No, seriously, because the other card...
Yeah, no, I believe you. I'm just like, wow. Like, because I remember looking at the deck in the Discord and being like, is this a pre-release deck?
No. It does kind of look like it, but the other card that's in the deck that's important is Thwacky. Its ability says, if you have a Pokemon with Festival Lead, the ability in the active, You can search your deck for any card. I'm telling you right now, Jake, having two Thwackies out is entirely broken. You can use the ability more than once.
Yeah, because you can use it more than once, so you effectively grab any two cards you want every single turn that you have the Diplin in the active.
And it's necessary because Festival Grounds is a necessary stadium for the deck. Like, if you don't have a Festival Grounds, you're not having a good time.
The game plan just does not work.
Exactly. But I will say, like, this list that I'm showing on screen and the list in the Discord, it needs a lot of changes. I think that, like, I would prioritize putting in a couple of Carmines in the list. A fourth bug catching set in the list is good. I think Lana's Aid is really good in this list. Because
you have a rhyme in there.
I did. I was testing it out. Early games, I didn't really use it much because I think Iron Bundle does a similar thing. But the thought there with rhyme was it's draw plus you can force your opponent to put something in the active if all they have in the back are small Pokemon. Mm-hmm. And so that way, instead of hitting twice and like really overkilling a thing that you maybe can't one hit KO, I'll play a rhyme, force you to bring something up that I can one hit knockout. That way I can kill it and then put damage somewhere else, maybe.
Okay.
So if your opponent is trying to hide behind a big HP mon, things like rhyme. But I think that Iron Bundle does the same thing. So I don't know if you actually need rhyme in the list, but I was playing around with it. But Kieran, because this deck has so much deck search with Thwacky, you don't always need a lot of draw. So like, Kieran is so good in this list, Jake. So good.
It's interesting to see the list that you come up with and that community does in general.
But just getting to some of the Discord questions real quick. Alex asked, Greninja EX, what do you recommend as another attacker? Do you have any thoughts on this, Jake?
Greninja EX is interesting. I mean, you're playing water energy, so I feel like definitely the idea of what's the thing that Radiant Greninja?
Yep.
It's like, man, what is this Pokemon that I'm thinking of? I think that's definitely like just a necessary card that you want in your deck overall.
Yeah, Radiant Greninja is a good attacker because Radiant Greninja does damage to the bench, so it can do like initial setup for your Radiant Greninja. And then also it lets you search for a card on its first attack. So you can go get your canceling colognes, like the things to get around Manaphy, basically. Another list I saw, there's a couple of other attackers. Palkia V-Star is a good combo because it can accelerate that energy onto itself or Radiant Greninja or elsewhere. And then Blood Moon Ursaluna, I've seen in a few lists.
Think you could do Blood Moon Ursaluna.
Yeah, if you just need a really big attack, because the only negative with Greninja EX is it doesn't do a ton of damage in one hit. Its whole goal is to set up extra prizes. So there's a world in which you're like, I need to take out this thing in front of me right now in the late game. And, you know, Blood Moon or Selena can do that.
If you're super set on also just having another attacker available, if you are, again, you're dead set on another attacker available, you can have not necessarily an attacker, you can have a couple different support Pokemon that can really help you out in the game. There are different ones that have been presented in like Pidgeot EX, right? If you're using Greninja to find a specific card, what if you could also use a Pidgeot because you're also using, you know, rare candies, things like that, maybe TM Evos to help find this strategy that you're doing. You can also use stuff like the Froslass, right? The new Froslass with Freezing Curtain during that Pokemon checkup phase allows you to put an extra damage counter, as well as then being able to use the Froslass EX, right? Do you remember that Pokemon?
No, I don't. I do not.
It has the ability Evanescent. If this Pokemon is in the active spot and is knocked out, flip a coin. If heads, your opponent takes one fewer prize. So that could be really nice overall. But as a grass type attacker that uses water energies, you can do weakness on like opposing Pokemon like Charizard and stuff with the attack with two water energies, does 140 damage. This attack also does 20 damage to one of your opponent's bench Pokemon, just helping you out, you know, kind of spread a little bit of damage. And as a just a one of attacker overall. And then that's not even including things like if you somehow build like a Bax Caliber Chin Pao Bibarel version, you just smash a Greninja line in the Chin Pao deck, you know, to be able with like a variety of attackers. And then, as you said, you know, like Palkia is one that has seen a little bit of play as well.
Next question here was the just mentioning the potential for the new for Torterra from Brilliant Stars.
I gotta look up what that card is.
Given the new item card bug catching set. So Torterra from Brilliant Stars, if you don't know, stage two, a single prize Pokemon, 190 HP. The attack that matters is grass and a colorless Evo Press. Does 50 damage for each of your evolution Pokemon in play. So you can do up to 300 damage with this attack. It's an interesting one. I don't know. Maybe this is great with the new bug catching set. I think you combine that with the Hyper Aroma as your, you know, card of choice. I think your question then becomes, okay, well, do you really focus on a Torterra deck, or is Torterra like a one-time attacker with like Defiance Band for you to knock out anything that comes in front of you? I don't know.
Well, I think the biggest issue with trying to make this Torterra work is that you have to have evolution Pokemon.
Yeah.
In play, right? So you need some sort of like stage one line, or you need some sort of stage two line to really help you get this game plan going. Like, you can't really use the Ogre Pond.
Yeah.
Right? Teal Mask Ogre Pond. The Teal Mask Ogre Pond would be awesome if it fit in this deck because it allows you to accelerate energies and draws cards, but not. I mean, I guess you can use it. You just wouldn't do as much damage with. And with Evo Press being something that, you know, just does more damage as, you know, the more evolutions you have in play, you probably play as many evolutions as possible in the contest. So
my thought here, Jake, is this actually could be a good attacker in the Diplin deck because
maybe, yeah, actually
you play a ton of stage ones in that deck between Thwacky and Diplin. And oftentimes I found myself like, well, I guess I'll throw another Applin on the field because I need as many Pokemon on my bench. And if I remember correctly, maybe this is rotated, but there was a Grottle that let you search your deck for a grass Pokemon or an evolution Pokemon.
Yeah, I think that's rotated. It's from Brilliant Stars, actually.
Okay. So that's another way. That's another way to find your Diplins and your Thwackies. So maybe that's the deck you play this in as a 1-1-1 line. And that way, like, hey, you know, scenario wise, you might be in a situation where you're like, I don't need to attack twice, or maybe I can't find a festival ground stadium. I don't know. And then boom, you've got this Torterra coming up doing 300 plus damage. I don't know. It might be a pretty sweet little, you know, line in that deck.
You played the Hyper Aroma. I was like, you have to play Hyper Aroma in this deck.
Yeah, you really need it, and then the Thwacky will find you whatever else you need after that. So, other questions here. I think we talked about what deck gets the biggest boost. We showed them in terms of what decks get negatively impacted the most. Man, I
would say effectively with Ogre Pond coming in, because we didn't really show an Ogre Pond list, but I do think Ogre Pond is a viable deck to play. I think Charizard gets hit a little bit because of that just grass weakness, right? There's another like kind of deck that just can beat it overall in the game, especially in the early stages of the game when your Charizard's not doing enough damage, right? When your opponent really hasn't taken any prize cards left.
I think that Dragapult also makes it a little tough because if the Dragapult player gets set up before you do. Most Charizard decks don't like evolving their Charmanders too soon, usually, right? Like, you want to keep them on the bench and see if you can, you know, evolve them only when you need to so that you're not wasting energy or whatever.
Yes.
But the problem is, even if you play the 70 HP Charizard, Charmanders, you could potentially play the old Hawlucha card that lets you put damage counters on two Pokemon.
I was going to say, why didn't we see that?
Maybe just, you know, people early in the format, people either are not prioritizing it, or it was like, it does take up a whole bench space and it's kind of annoying. Because once you get it down, it's never doing anything again. So I can kind of understand not playing it, but that was my only other thought. It was like, maybe that also kind of makes Charizard a little wary, is between Dragapult, Devolution, and then, like you were saying, all of the grass type attackers, like Ogerpon and even Diplin. I don't know how popular that deck is going to be, but like, type attacker.
It is.
So, you know. And then I think the last question here is, do we think Dragapult EX will have a big impact on the current meta or not? Jake, thoughts?
I think, kind of like how Nakai B was saying in our Discord server, Dragapult is a popular deck. Like, people are going to love that deck. People are going to pick it up, and people are going to start playing it immediately on day one as probably one of the more popular decks in the format. Because it, one, feels somewhat familiar, and two, it's going to be one of the better decks in the format. I think Dragapult will have an immediate impact because, like we kind of mentioned earlier, you know, it has that ability to just get like these little baby Pokemon that sit around in the format, but also just deal enough damage to be able to compete with everybody else overall. And then that ability on Dracloak is just so good. Airmail is just, or Surveillance is just so good overall as an ability. I don't know if it'll be the top tier deck though. In there, I'm not gonna sit here and say like it's gonna be 25% of the meta and take up six of the top eight spots in the first regional that it's in, but I do think that like you could go into a tournament with Dragapult and maybe win the tournament, right? It's not like I'm taking I would rank it higher than Diplin. Sorry, Sean.
No, you don't. I would agree. I think it's a better deck than Diplin. I think I think it'll be a good deck. I think that maybe it doesn't matter, but I do worry about, I think a lot of people will play the deck that are not used to playing decks that need you to think through your prize mapping when the game starts. Because I think that's the one thing with Dragapult VMAX and other spread decks is, the game starts, you see what you're playing against, you see what your opponent puts down turn one, basically. And from there, you have to say, okay, if the deck has been balanced by the designers well, which it probably has, relatively, you have the same amount of turns to win as your opponent, probably. And it's going to be up to you to map where those damage counters go, like what Pokemon are most important, and how you're going to get to your six prizes before your opponent knocks out three of your Dragapults. And I think a lot of players are not familiar with that style of play because it hasn't been around for a couple of years, really. Like, Rapid Strike Urshifu a little bit, but, like, not much. So I think it'll see a lot of play, but I think you'll see a lot of misplay at first. So I think that will be, like, maybe some really good players like Tord and others who, like, the draw engine and the ability to make all those choices really play to their strengths. They might do really, really well with it. What I would love to see is, I would love to see a different attacker for Dragapult EX, like an alternate attacker that like can kind of come out of nowhere and do something different. I think decks that are the best in the format almost always have one secondary attacker. In Dragapult right now, Radiant Alakazam, is that your second attacker? Like, it's not.
No.
It's not great. That's why
I actually, is not in format anymore, right?
No.
I was going to say that rotated, right?
But the one card I would think that maybe you play over Radiant Alakazam, I'm just going to throw that out there, Radiant Charizard. You are playing fire energy in the deck. Just think about it. You could play a fire energy. You could play one Radiant Charizard. And situationally, at the end of the game, that might be the difference, because your Dragapults, like, if you play it right, you might not have any two prizers on the bench. You don't need to evolve your Dragapult until you're ready to attack with it. Throw down a Charizard when you got two, your opponent has two prizes left, and say go.
I think it would really just depend on what your deck sees more often? Like, does your deck more often see the use of something like Radiant Alakazam, or does it more often see the benefit of the effects of Radiant Charizard, right? Because again, you can only play one Radiant Pokemon per deck, and with some of the combos that we talked about earlier with like Gardevoir, right, with the Monkey Dory being able to move five energies off of the Kirlias, you could actually theoretically get a knockout on a fresh non-damaged Kirlia with the Radiant Alakazam, move two damage counters towards it, and then do the other six to knock it out. Yeah. So
I think it might matter more. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so there's definitely different situations, but that's only in one of the, you know, many decks in the format that has that influence. So you have to evaluate, you know, is that higher, or is using the Radiant Charizard to answer a Blood Moon Ursa Luna a better option, right?
Yeah, that's a really, it's interesting. So we don't know. We don't have all the answers. I'm sure I will see many of those answers at NAIC, which is when this set will be legal. So for those of you wondering, we're talking about this set. You got to wait all the way until the first weekend of June for any legal events. But that said, you can play it at your locals, you know, proxy things. Give us your thoughts.
Watch some YouTube videos. Talk about it in the Discord. That is free to join. Again, link in the description and show notes below. Sean, do you have anything else?
Nope. Go Diplin.
Go Diplin. Also, look out for your PSA. Go get your... I can't wait until like a PSA. Like, there's a report of somebody buying this like extremely obscure, crazy PSA Pokemon card at a GameStop that's like worth so much money, but because there's not enough of them selling out there, they were able to buy it for like really cheap or something like that. I don't know. GameStop stock going crazy though in today for anybody that follows stock. I think it's halted for the fifth time today, this morning on Monday.
I don't bother with the stock nonsense.
Because the owner tweeted for like the first time since 2021, and now the stock is going.
Cool.
Which I don't know, but anyways, Sean, that's going to be it for the Metapod podcast. Thanks so much for listening to Sean and I right here. See you next week on the podcast that revolves around the evolving meta.